Hi everyone. My name's Adam, Adult Child, and really grateful to be here. Even if I don't feel it in every cell in my body just yet. And I just want to get a couple things out of the way. Welcome to anybody that's new. What you're going to hear from me is my story, and it's been my experience, strength, and hope. Hopefully, there'll be some strength and hope in there too. For my recovery in ACA. I'll try to stick to my ACA story, but know that I have been in 12-step recovery most of my adult life. And so I'll speak to that a little bit. But I do hope that you get something. I say something that is going to be helpful to you. And it's my story, right? If you don't relate to every bit of it, it's okay. It's okay. I'm going to read something in the very beginning that we kind of touch on in sort of the preamble, if you will. But I like the full reading that's in the book because it describes the adult child in a perfect way. It's one of the things that made me know that I belonged here. And that's the other thing in terms of belonging here. Regardless of who likes this fact or not, you belong here when you say you do. It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks about that. You belong here when you say you do. That's the way 12-step fellowships work, and and I'm grateful for that because neither of the programs that I belong to did I want to belong to when I started. I always thought there were certain people that didn't want me to belong to it. And luckily for me and everybody else, that makes no difference. It's irrelevant. Because the stories that were being said here were things that I could were things that I could relate to, number one, but most importantly, I really, really needed to relate to in order to find a solution for the problems. So I'll just start with this. Is that it? I think that's and here's the other thing. This was barely last minute that I decided that I came in. And I think it's just exactly the way that it should be. When I think I've been in ACA for 6 years. It gets my recovery period becomes very risky when I think that when I think that I have when I feel like I've arrived, and I don't mean to make that sound any way except that some sense of humility is good for me always, and I'm definitely in a place in my own recovery where there's an unsteadiness, and I won't call that it's some discomfort, let's say, and I think that what it is just like everything in life, there are peaks and valleys, and I wouldn't call this a valley. Well, I think I would call it a valley. It's just the valleys look different. The valleys aren't the lows that they were when I first came here. The valleys are just different. It's almost as though I've hit a new plateau, and new growth is needing to happen, and that is both exciting because I look at the 6 years past and I look at where I've come from, but it's also unnerving because I know that I can't go back there, and I also know that I don't have any idea what the future looks like, and that's the unnerving part. So I'll get more specific now. I know those were generalities, but I'll get to more specifics. So I'm going to read this bit out of our big red book. It's on Roman numeral 7. It's in where they describe the adult child, and we read a little bit of this in the preamble, but I like the full description. It says, an adult child is someone who responds to adult situations with self-doubt, self-blame, or a sense of being wrong or inferior, all learned from stages of childhood. Without help, we unknowingly operate with ineffective thoughts and judgments as adults. The regression can be subtle, but it is there sabotaging our decisions and our relationships. Another part of the preamble that I've been listening to lately, and we say it at the beginning of every meeting, is it says some of us it talks about denial. Some of us don't have some of us can't believe that our problems are the result of our childhood upbringing. And that was definitely my story. I think it's the 13th trait in our traits that talks about how I don't really feel like I was as affected by my childhood as I thought I was, as it turns out that I am. And so that was definitely me coming in. So I came into ACA when I was 51 years old, I think 50, 51. Again, this was the fall of, or actually probably the spring of 2020, but I don't call my like emotional sobriety date till the fall, till September, because for me that's an important date, because that's the date that I fully stepped 2 feet into ACA. I had already started to do some dedicated work. I committed to doing some a meeting with the traits book, and I had been resisting really fully belonging here for several months at that point. But it was actually going through the laundry list workbook traits, the laundry list workbook that I have it here somewhere. But it's one of our pieces of literature that where I really fully knew I belonged here, and it was probably almost all the way through it that I came out of denial sufficiently to be able to and I say that because if I can't identify the problem, there's no way that I'm going to adopt a solution. And so that book really helped me, and doing it with a group of men was actually what helped me identify that I do have this problem, and I do belong here. So I'm gonna just go to the beginning. I grew up in Southern California. I now live in Vancouver, BC. I've been here for almost 20 years, but I grew up in Southern California, and my father was a farmer, and my mother was a stay-at-home housewife. My father was an alcoholic, whom I look back now, I just always thought he was an alcoholic, but now I also see the progression of his disease. How in the beginning, although there were always issues, they got progressively worse. Probably about the time that I was maybe before 10, after 10, they went south really, really fast. But up until, they say, between the ages of 5 and 10 that I can remember, his alcoholism was progressing. But at the same time, he was also very effective and very productive in his life. He had a fourth grade education, and he managed to build a business and build. He did a lot. He did a lot. That's just a. He was a very resourceful man. He was Mexican American. He knew that he was a minority in another person's world, and he behaved that way. You know, he worked twice as hard as anybody else probably, and didn't try to take from other. Anyway, he lived a life that where he knew that he needed to be on his P's and Q's for a long time. Not sure why I'm saying all that, except that he worked very hard, and he was very productive for a long time. What I know, what I remember about that period of my life is my teachers. The literature talks about this, and actually, you know, in doing the practicing solution here, I've gotten to see where there were actually people, very, very, very supportive, loving people in my life who noticed that I needed some support and guidance. And that often came in the form of teachers for me. So from my first grade teacher to my second grade teacher and on up. But I just say that my first grade teacher, I remember because she would have a lot of meetings with my mother. And let me get to the dysfunction, because that's what's key here. What I know about that period of my life is that I don't remember a lot of my childhood and the home life, except that I absolutely hated being at home. I knew there was a lot of fighting. There was a drunken father that was going to be more and more drunk as the years went by, and all I wanted to do was be somewhere else. And I started running away from home at about 6 years old. And again, it was my teachers who would build relationships with my mother, who would come and salvage me, or try to save me. And there's again r just random instances that I remember them being present. And again, the first time I ran away from home, it was between 5 and 6. They found me in the middle of the night, sitting on a curb at where my cousins lived. I have no idea how I found my way there. And I just remember the headlights coming right at me in the dark. And we lived out in the country, and so it wouldn't be easy to find me. So they had to know where to look. What I remember is my heart sinking, because they had found me and they were going to take me back there. And I hated it. I hated every moment of living in my childhood home. And those homes would change, but what was consistent was that I didn't like being there. My father, I have 6 siblings. My father would beat every one of them, except for me and my younger brother, and he would also beat my mother. I won't go into those details because that can be triggering for a lot of people. It certainly is for me at times, and I don't necessarily like to hear it in a general way, like I just more in a general way, not specifics, but let's just say it was incredibly traumatic. And today I know that I know things about it and the way that I reacted to that, and I would have put my life in danger to save my mother. So he would take her away, where I couldn't, and no one else could come and help. So that's what that was like. At about and I don't know, maybe the second, third, and fourth grade, each of those grades, I had teachers once again who really brought me up, let's say. And if there was any confidence that was instilled in me during that period, it was because of them. Because there was really what I would call there was a psychological, emotional trauma that was happening for me as a kid. I was not one of the ones that was beat for whatever reason. I really do think that they were just tired. My father was just tired by the time I came up. I had older siblings that really got a really terrible, terrible experience. The one that got the worst, the black sheep of the family, has now passed away. He too had alcoholism, and he never found recovery. But yeah, so that's my brother Reuben. I sort of lost my train of thought there. It was my story is more one of neglect, just outright neglect. There just wasn't any time or room for thought of me and often my younger brother. But there was something about my younger brother that made it a bit different for him, I think. Because he was the youngest one and he was sort of the baby, he did end up getting attention that I know I didn't get. And that was just accepted by me. I was kind of raised as sort of a middle kid, middle child. So I'll fast forward a bit. And maybe I'll go back to some of these, because now that I do the inner family work and I do IFS parts work, so I usually just refer to my parts as parts, and that works for me. It's personal choice. I relate to my parts much, much better than I do necessarily to different necessarily age groups, but there are definitely age groups that are important at times. And what I know is that throughout the ages, like between 5 and say, 16, 17, there were periods of low, like where I was more of the laundry, the victim. And then there were periods where I became more of the perpetrator. And then I would return to the victimhood and then go back to perpetrator. And I would, I, so I operated from both of those laundry lists, the original laundry list and the other laundry list. I didn't know that when I first came here. I probably spent the first 3 years only identifying with the other laundry list because I had found those traits to be more effective at getting through life. I know that. Those are also the traits that brought me into ACA because I could no longer hold relationships and do and function in the life that I was accustomed to functioning, especially in my work life, which was the only thing that I had left when I came here, and I was losing that. And it was though it was because I could not I, those traits themselves, the other laundry list, were dominating my existence. And I couldn't deny it anymore. I couldn't pretend that they weren't. And so I'll so at 13 years old, this is probably one of the most significant points in my life, is that at 13 years old, my father had his alcoholism had become so severe that he was in his lazy boy, in his DTs. And he couldn't even stand up on his own. He was either on the verge of having a seizure, or just completely passing out, or because we also would run out of money. That's like there was a feast or famine. There was always, rags to riches sort of experience, a typical alcoholic household. On one particular day, I just decided it was an accumulation of events. Really bad events, but on one particular day, I just decided that I would leave, and that I would never come back. And I was as determined at that point as I had ever been about making any decision whatsoever. And so I packed a paper bag with all my worldly possessions, and I walked out the door, and I told them to fuck off. And I didn't want to, I really didn't, I thought it was gone. I thought it was gone forever. And I was, but what I didn't know was that my mother would follow. And many, many, many times, in fact, my biggest resentments were toward my mother when I first came here. And I wouldn't say that it's a lot different now. I just don't have the same resentments, but or the level just aren't what they were when I came in here to ACA. But the by we would do the classic thing of escaping. We lived in California. My mother's family lived in Texas. We would all get in the car. She'd be fed up. She'd be tired of it all. We'd drive off to Texas 1,000 miles, and then we'd stay there for a week or so, and then it wouldn't be only a matter of time before she would just get back in the car and we'd come back. And just like that time that they picked me up on the curbside, when I'd run away from home, and they were going to take me back. Every time we got back in the car in Texas, I just hated every second of knowing that we were going to be returning back to this hellhole. And it just happened over and over. So when I left at 13, I knew that there was just no hope that she was ever going to leave. And so I kind of, if it was going to be, it would be up to me. And so that's what happened. Within a day or two, she followed me. I literally walked right down the street. There were neighbors, and that's where I stayed. And then we came back within the next couple of days for my mom. I refused to go in the house, but my mom packed a few things. She was going to start moving out of the house. And as we drove away, on one of those loads that she was driving away with, we saw the house go up in flames behind us. And I've probably said this before in this very room, because that's another remarkable thing, because what all I felt was relief that I would never have to go back there again. Of course, that also marked another sort of like very, a very, it was a pointed time in my life growing up, because it would also be the way that I severed relationships and severed things when I left. And that would happen for many years later. And I always knew that there was something not well about that, but it was kind of the way that I knew to do things, just sever, make sure that it was never gonna, it was gonna really end. And so that was some sort of, I guess, a habit if that was formed. I started drinking at 13. I was full alcoholic by the time I was 17. I was ready to stop drinking before I left my teenage years, and but I couldn't. I had already had alcoholism, and I am somebody who's powerless over alcohol. And I found AA through a treatment center at the at the at 23. That first year, I think I was 6 months sober at the time, at 23 years old, where I came across my first ACA speaker. I totally identified with the speaker. I could tell you his name. He's now dead, but I could still listen to his, and I remember those days. And I identified with his story. But what I, you know, one thing I was preoccupied with getting sober. And that was paramount. Without being sober, there was just no life ahead of me. I knew that. But I never thought to return back to ACA and deal with it as a real issue, right? I'm just another person who had a dysfunctional family, who had, you know, alcoholism in the family, and I was the lucky one. I was the one that escaped it all because I got sober, and I actually had the ability to add opportunities that my family didn't. I'm the only person in my family that's actually gotten sober, had any form of recovery at all. I shouldn't say that. They've had their own lives. They've chose religious. Some of them have chosen religious avenues. That was not going to be for me. In fact, I hated AA in the beginning because I thought that's exactly what it was, and it turned out that it wasn't, and that worked for me. And what I'll say is that I was very young when that happened, and I did all the things in AA, and I also did all the things in my life. I went on and I got an education, and that was also that's always been something that was important to me. And so I did that. I built a life. I built a career. I got married. I did all the things. I had one relapse in that period, and that was about 6 months. And then I immediately came back to AA and stayed in AA for almost 20 years. And right before I was about a couple years before I came to ACA. I hadn't been to an AA meeting in probably 10 years or maybe seven. And I had completely abandoned that life. And I'd gone on to live this other life that I've been living, built a career, et cetera, et cetera. And I'd gotten married. My marriage was actually starting to go down, was starting to go south. I had achieved several degrees at this point, and I had kind of I've gotten the job that I wanted, et cetera. I had all the things, including the CV. Especially for me, it was really important to get that CV. Like, I needed to have that resume say that I was important and that I was validated. And when all the outside was validated and none of the inside was, I found myself in that desperate place. I'm skipping through a whole bunch of years, because I'll have to say that most of that time that I was sober, I definitely practiced dysfunction, but I was so committed and I was quite disciplined during that period, to get what I need, which is another reason why I know that when I put the effort into something, I can. There's quite a bit that I've been able to accomplish in my life. But what I failed to see was where I needed to place that discipline. The discipline was always in trying to figure out how to, it was always about validating something on the outside. And I know I'm talking in extremes here, and I should be careful not to do that, because I don't think I don't think it's those polar extremes are just aren't they're just not accurate, right? I lived the middle of the road some of the time, but I just had my I was fixated on the validation that would happen on the outside, thinking that somehow that it was going to actually fill me up on the inside, you know? And so I'm at this place. I had been living between Vancouver and San Francisco at the time, and I reached a place in my marriage where I knew it wouldn't go on, and so we started to end that. I moved back to San Francisco permanently, and I was standing in the in the BART station one night, and in the underground train station, and I still remember this quite vividly. I've never ever been suicidal. I've certainly had bouts of depression, but I remember looking at the tracks and thinking, I don't think anybody would even know if I certainly wouldn't be missing this life. And that I'm not even sure that I've ever even said it quite like that. But I know that that's how I felt on the inside. Again, I wasn't truly suicidal, so I didn't act on anything like that. But it was within a matter of months that I picked up a drink again. And I'll just say that for me, I met a form of alcoholism that I had never experienced in my younger years. I really learned what powerlessness was, and it was nothing like what I had remembered before. And it was hell on earth, getting sober again. And I say that because it was that experience that caused me to come to ACA, because when I finally did, I was only out for about a year. And I say only because I spent half of that year trying to get sober, and again, 6 months burning my entire life to the ground, because I couldn't stop drinking and using drugs. And then and when I did get sober again, when it did take again, when I finally became willing to do all the things that I had done once before, only like my life depended on it this time, I was able to get sober again. And what was left for me, though, was all of that misery that I had picked up the drink with, and the unresolved ACA issues that I never addressed during the 20 years that I had been sober before. And so, about 18 months sober, I started to have I had some significant psychiatric issues during that relapse. But what I'll say is, those were all resolved or resolving by the time I was about 18 months sober, and then the pandemic hit, and I started to have these PTSD symptoms. And I happened to be a healthcare professional. I know what those symptoms were, and I knew that I was not. I knew that what was happening in my life didn't match my reaction to what was happening, and that was really the key that I needed to get some mental help. And I'd come across a person in my AA recovery that knew about a trauma therapist locally, and I'm skipping a whole lot of stuff, but there was a lot of trauma that happened during that 2 3 year period, where the time while I was when I relapsed and then getting sober again, there was just a lot of I was living in such great dysfunction that it was I didn't recognize the person that I was before the relapse. I just and during that relapse, I also lost every relationship. There isn't a single relationship that's the same since then. And it's been 8 years now, and I still those relationships were burned to the ground, and just like my career was, and so on and so forth. So again, I started to have those symptoms, the PTSD symptoms. I saw a trauma therapist. I saw my AA sponsor, who isn't an ACA member, is the one that recommended that I go to those meetings where they have the yellow book. That's how he referenced ACA. He didn't really know much about it, but he said the things that are going on for you sound like some of the guys that I sponsored, and it sounds like he's it sounds like it sounds like you might need to do that yellow book. And so I'm going to fast forward through a bit of that. I did EMDR with the therapist first. And then I gradually started going to meetings. But once I started going to meetings, ACA meetings, I related so much to the traits and I just could not stop. Even though I didn't like it and I didn't want to belong here and I didn't want to have these issues and I really wanted to be, I wanted to be able to fix, honestly, I just wanted to be able to fix myself. I didn't want to have to join another 12-step program to fix my life. And so, but I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop coming. And it probably took about 30 meetings. We were all online by then, which worked for me because I went to about 30 meetings before I sat through an entire meeting before. And the first meeting that I went to was we did a feelings check at the beginning of the meeting, and I thought, what the hell is going on here? The idea that we were all going to sit and talk about how we were feeling sounded so foreign to me. It was just like it was like some foreign land. That was like the first meeting I went to, and I was like, and I don't know, whatever preconceived ideas I had about it all, about ACA and everything else, and how, anyway, it was just not comfortable, let's say. And again, I went to a bunch of meetings. I gradually got closer to some people. I started to do this work, this laundry list workbook, traits book. And for me, and then again, this is just for me. I was actively doing AA. I was actively sponsoring people, and I was actively taking people through that course of action. And I'll say, I knew right away that this. I'll say, when I fully accepted that I belonged here, I knew that this is not the same program for me. It is not the same 12-step program. There are very different issues, and the way that I address those issues for me are completely different. That program, the AA program, is perfect for my alcoholism. It does very little for my ACA problem. The only thing that it does is it brought me to a relationship with a higher power. Actually, I shouldn't say that either. It also made me an accountable human being. That inventory process has made me responsible in a way that I don't know that I could do the reparenting work in this fellowship. But as a result, I've had to address ACA in a very different way. I do lean more toward Tony A's steps and approach, because who I bring to take care of my inner family, all of my parts, it is got to be a much more gentle and compassionate person than the person that I bring to the AA work. It's just how it is for me. It works. I'll talk about a so after I did the laundry list workbook trades book with the group of guys, we decided there was a group of us that kind of split off and formed a private yellow book workbook, and we did the steps together. And that's really kind of the way that I've done ACA, is really in a fellow traveler model, where we've done it in a group, and we did all of the we did the entire workbook together, and that was good for me because it wasn't the Tony A steps, but it was important for me to really do the AA literature as it was written. So that I could know for myself how to make choices about the way that I would practice ACA, and the way that I would practice. I needed to have all the information to be able to sort of cultivate my path here. So after doing that, we started to do the Loving Parent Guidebook together, and that was We only got through about half of that, and then the group splintered off. But by this point, I had also started to do IFS, and it's been something that IFS has been the thing that's worked for me the most. I mean, the Loving Parent Guidebook is good. There's nothing wrong with that, but there's something very concrete about the IFS work that has been the method that has worked for me. During when I was during my life before, I had already an established a spiritual practice from the East. And what really works nicely for me is that I blend the IFS work with the spiritual practice that I have, the daily meditation practice that I have, which is a very quiet practice, but it just puts me in that play in a place of well, where there's my higher power is just always part of that process. And I just don't know how I would do any of this without a higher power. I'm not somebody that I don't think I could, I don't, I just don't, I, it's just, it's not my experience. So I'll just say that. I've only been able to do this with a higher power. I'll tell you today, I did not know, what I would bring. I kept thinking that I was going to do a meditation before the meeting, and it never happened. And I honestly, I prefer to do that, especially if I'm going to speak or something like that. But it just the I, my the day just didn't work out that way. And what I had to just kind of come to terms with is, yeah, this is me. This is me. This is what I bring, and it's just live me. There has been times where I've felt, well, let's just say I'm just this is there's nothing prepared about me today. We'll just say that. I want to kind of get current with this bit about my life. One of the things I've started doing in my ACA work as of late, I mean, I belong to this meeting. I belong to several other meetings that I see a lot of people here, and there's several people. There's plenty of people here that know me that we've all traveled together over the years, and I'm grateful for you all. You are my family. I don't know. I can't imagine what my life would be like without you all. So, and wherever you are is exactly I don't know. You all come here on these days that I get to spend time with you, and so I'm grateful for that. Thank you for that. I've also started sponsoring people in ACA, and I've started actually introducing some of the guys that I work with in AA that want to do the ACA work, and that's been new for me over this last year, because it's more of a direct sponsorship thing, which is not something I do AA sponsorship, but I haven't done it really in ACA that well. And so I got actually a service sponsor, and that's actually changed the way I do all of the service. In fact, it's changed my whole service life, at least momentarily. And I'm really I'm grateful for that, because I never had a service sponsor before. And I never had anybody to tell to show me what I was doing. And how dysfunctional my own service was. And so I'm grateful for that. I'm not going to speak to that a lot more, except that I've gotten guidance and taken the guidance, which has been really, 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 really useful for me. I didn't think I'd speak this long, but I'm gonna probably take the time. So the last thing I'll say is I talked about being in this sort of like valley. And when I started off, my life looks night and day compared to what it was when I came into ACA. I don't suffer from the anxiety. I don't have the PTSD symptoms anymore. I don't have the I was never officially diagnosed with PTSD, by the way. I didn't see somebody. I just recognized the symptoms. They were close enough for me to treat them seriously and see a professional. But I don't have those symptoms anymore. What I do have is what the reading that I just said. Well, I still function in several parts of my life, the way that with the doubt and fear, that it's just different now. It's different. My work life is a lot like it was before my relapse, only it's better because I'm fully present for it. But all of the same issues that came up then, are coming up now. I have problems with the same types of people, in my work life and in my home life, that I just have a solution now. I have access to parts of me that I didn't know needed me. In other words, I have a loving parent practice. That's really the only difference, but that's made the world of difference, actually. And when I can't access those parts of me the way that I need to, the way that I, in order to function in the world, I can effectively pause, and come here to you, and just being around you, listening to the way that you're getting through your day and your life, helps to regulate me, and then gives me that pause and that time that I need to actually come back to me. And I'm always able to, I have enough experience with this over the last several years now that I can I'm confident that I can always get back to my loving parent practice even when I'm not experiencing it in the moment. When I talk about a valley, it's not I think it is a valley, but I'm not sure because well, it doesn't feel the same, that's all. But I'm at a new starting place. Let's just say my launching place is different. I've started dating, and I know nothing about what I'm doing. I know nothing about it, mostly because I have no interest in the types of men. I happen to be gay. The types of men that I used to be interested in, the types of people, even my friends, right? Male or female. I just don't have any interest in those types, but I don't know what healthy looks like yet. I just don't know. And then every once in a while, I suspect, I wonder if this is healthy. And I ask myself this, I wonder if this one is healthy and I'm just not attracted to that yet. And the question's still out there, right? I don't know. I don't have that answer. But what I'm not willing to do is throw myself and especially those vulnerable parts of myself to the wolves the way that I used to. I did that on a daily basis before. And I don't have to do that anymore. I still have the loneliness though, because I don't know what dating's supposed to look like and intimacy really, really supposed to look like. I know it because of what I share with you, probably. That's probably this is where I get to have intimacy. So I know that this is comfortable. So I guess I have a lot of hope that will be comfortable someday too. But it's not just in the dating, right? It's in all of my relationships. It's the people that I want to be in my inner circle. Wow, I sucked up all that time. I'm really grateful that I was offered the opportunity to come and share my story again. I hope it was a little different from last year. And I'm really grateful for you, my family. Thank you.